Welcome, Lund Loyalists, to John Lund Unleashed. Those watching on YouTube, on the John Lund Unleashed and Bay Area Sports Collective channels. Viewers on X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and Lundos listening to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. John Lund Unleashed, brought to you by Reappell Sports Medicine. Got pain? Check out our revolutionary stem cell treatments. And guys, if low T is bringing you down, Reappell Sports Medicine can put you back in the game. Now all juiced up and ready to go, here's John.
Definitely juiced up, definitely ready to go. Look at that broken bat right there. It's a giant season on the verge of collapse as they get some early runs. The Mike Wade Jr. actually had a couple of hits. But then that fateful eighth inning, Landon Root pitched well for a minute and couldn't get past it. So that's the big question and a ton going on today. Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is John Lund Unleashed, episode 153. We'll go over the chalkboard in a minute. We'll say good morning to everybody momentarily, but welcome in. If you are new, thank you. Consider jumping on over to the YouTube page to John Lund Unleashed. We have a tremendous community. We have a lot of fun every day. You can have differing opinions, different thoughts. It's just fine. Thank you very much. You don't have to agree with me and what I say. I say a bunch of stuff, and maybe you agree with some of it, maybe you do not. Maybe you remember me from my KNBR days or 30 years in sports radio and doing lots of these shows and pre-half and post-game shows and daily shows and all sorts of stuff. But welcome in, regardless of how you got here. Maybe you're watching on Instagram at John Lund Radio. Maybe you've stumbled across us on X at John Lund Radio. That is great as well. Maybe you should be working, but you're watching on LinkedIn, which is tremendous. Maybe you're listening to the show later on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast. That is great too. Maybe you're watching on YouTube a little bit later, but remember, please subscribe. That would be great. Give us a like so the algorithm says not half bad, and get your alerts on because we always send out stuff during the day. And if there's breaking news, we hit that as well. So you always got to know when the show is on. So thank you, thank you, thank you for all of that. Before we get going, as you know, before we hit the chalkboard, before we say good morning to everyone, do remember the show is sponsored by good friends. And you can see right there, I've kind of put a NASCAR version down below there, but that is the logo to Dr. Jeffrey Reappell and Reappell Sports Medicine. You can click right on there in the QR code. I just was talking to my wife this morning, and again, she says this every day, because if you have so much pain like she had in her shoulder and her elbow and her foot, every morning that you don't have that pain, you're like, this is awesome. And unsolicited to me, she just came up to me and went, man, this is so cool that I'm feeling great today. And you know, normally she would ice in the morning and all those kind of things. But because of Dr. Reappell and the stem cell procedure that she had, she's had a couple of them now with Dr. Reappell. And Dr. Reappell was one of the first in California to do stem cell. She's feeling great. So a lot less pain with the shoulder, the elbow. She can walk around a lot better than she was able to do. I told you this before. We have in our garage, like a lot of people, you have that garage fridge. And then we have this like square fridge and it's, or excuse me, square freezer. And it just has like wraps and things like that. She doesn't even have to use it anymore. It's absolutely great. So that's because of Dr. Reappell. Hit that right there with your phone. If you don't, if you can't, if something's going on and you're like, what the hell? Real simple. All you got to do is use your favorite search engine. Google it, if you will. Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. That's R-I-O-P-E-L-L-E. And they do all sorts of other procedures like mine. I've had low T for years and years and years, and you know how it is. It makes you cranky, tired. You're like, what the heck's going on? You got low T. You do a quick blood test, and then they get you to the level that you should be, and then you feel better like I do. You have energy. You're not as cranky. Your metabolism is a little bit faster, so you can lose weight more quickly or stay where you want to be. It's just a great thing, and I've been doing it for years, but I discovered about a year ago, Dr. Reappell, and he does the quick blood test, and then it lasts. The procedure he does, it lasts for like 4 months at a time. You don't have to go in and get weekly shots like I used to have to do. So Dr. Jeffrey Reappell, check him out, and they do all sorts of other procedures. He is the fine sponsor of the program, and you can see that pair of legs down there. That is Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. Do remind you throughout the show that you need to get that done. You want to start feeling better, and like I said, all sorts of other great procedures that they do. Dr. Jeffrey Reappell. Look it up if you didn't hit that QR code. All right, it is episode 153, the Giants season on the brink. We'll talk about it, especially the eighth inning. I love Bob Melvin. He has treated us well through the years, whether he was with the A's and we were the flagship there, whether he was with the Padres and they were going through that rough season. At the end, he came on with Pop and I every single day. He was great. He has been very nice to my son I like Bob Melvin personally, but when things happen and you scratch your head, you just have to say stuff, and we will today. Bryce Eldridge is starting to really swing it at Double A, and you can go Double A to the majors. Could they be that desperate that they might need him? Got a little loot news on Bryce Eldridge as he homered, and then there's another prospect list out, so we got to talk about him today. The closer role gets changed. You could see that coming for a long time with Ryan Walker's mental issues coming to the forefront and Camilo Duvall pitching the way that he has. That's, to me, whatever. We'll get more into that. I mean, it's a big story, don't get me wrong, but really it's the sticks. The bullpen is the least of their worries. 49ers 11th, I will explain that. Seth Walder's a friend of mine and was great on our show on many occasions. And he did a list with his analytics and where he put the 49ers and why. Robert Saleh, I got something to talk about with Robert Saleh today. OKC on the verge. They just blew the hell out of Minnesota last night. And a lot of people are trying to equate that to what happened to the Warriors and could they have beat Minnesota with Steph and all that. It's not that. It's OKC is that good. And they are not only on the verge. I'm not saying they're on the verge because they're going to the NBA Finals. They're on the verge of a long Spurs Warriors type run with Sam Presti running the ship if they don't screw it up. So we'll explain that as well. Where was this Minnesota team? I'll explain because a lot of people are hitting me up going, could they have beaten them if they had Curry? Still didn't like the matchup, but we'll do that. The Knicks will test my theory because I don't believe that Oklahoma City and Indiana are going to go to the NBA Finals. It would be the lowest rated NBA Finals of all time, and there's a lot of money there if New York, the number one media market in the country, and the most TV sets in our country gets to the NBA Finals, but they are down 3-1, so that's not good. I'm still confused by TNT. Not only did I talk about it yesterday, but I put some shorts out yesterday about it. They're not dying. The show isn't ending. You know, all of our favorite shows, I just brought up Sopranos when I was talking about that in my shorts yesterday, but whatever your favorite show is, you're bummed out, man. You're like, oh, man, that Netflix show ended, or this show, or that show, or whatever. It's not ending, man, and it's not going to some TV network that we can't find. It's going to the worldwide leader in sports. It's going to be easier to find. The question is not, oh, my gosh, it's ending, or, oh, my gosh, we're so sad. It's, will Disney screw it up? Sorry, guys, got to have Screamin' A on. Sorry, guys, got to have Kendrick Perkins' dumbass on. Like, then it's over. That's when it's over. Like, we can have a funeral when Kendrick Perkins goes on. We can have a funeral when Screamin' A goes on. But for right now, if ESPN leaves it alone, which that's not what big networks are really good at, and corporations in general, if we just tweak it our way, you just ruined it. You know, they buy out things. This is less about TV to me and more about what corporations do, which corporations will take this great product, right? It could be food. It could be, you know, whatever it is. And they buy this place, right? They buy a restaurant, they buy a recipe, they buy a spacely sprocket, it doesn't matter what it is. And they think, you know what, we can just make it that much better. And then they screw it up. It's like, no, it's really good. It's really, 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 really good. Don't screw it up. Don't touch it. And then they can't help it because they have these giant egos of these presidents and they think to themselves, we can't just leave it alone. We got to put our company spin on it. No, you don't. Your company spin is not script. Like, look at your pathetic pre-half and post outside of Bob Myers or when you have Mike Malone on it. Now, I shouldn't say pathetic. That maybe is too strong of a word. Malika Andrews is absolutely great. But when it's Screamin' A on one end and Kendrick Perkins on another, and they should just be on the daytime shows. They shouldn't be that adjacent to the actual product, whether it be the NFL, the NBA, or whatever. And that's what I'm talking about. Just leave well enough alone. And they've never been able to figure it out. They've tried everybody. You know how many iterations of pre-half and post ESPN has gone through, and they cannot find the chemistry that TNT has, and they just won't be able to resist screwing it up. Now, you can have a funeral at that point. No problem. I get it. Have a funeral at that point, but not now because they haven't done it yet, although I'm very, very skeptical. But it's the show isn't going away. The show is just moving to an easier, accessible network that you hope doesn't screw it up. All right. Good morning to everybody. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. By the way, even though I went on that last rant right there, I'm in a great mood. I'm just feeling great today. I told you this, I'm past it almost. Today's Thursday. Hang on one sec. I'm almost past the cranky fasting part of the week. I've been doing this like 3 or 4 days. I don't eat past 8 o'clock, and really I don't eat past about 6 o'clock. And then I don't eat till noon. So I'm doing like the 16 or 18 hour fast. And for the first few days, you're like, but today I feel good. This is the first day where I woke up and I'm like, not hungry, feeling good. Everything's great. So anyway, good morning. Good morning. John is here this morning. John Joseph. Good morning, Catalina and Pine Needle Skills. We got to get to that dream. Joy, it is always a, yep, you're right, Joy. Enrique is here this morning. AJ, great turnout today. Christian, if you don't know what I'm talking about here, Pine Needle is here. Danny, good to check in with you, my friend. By the way, I'm going to be in your neck of the woods this weekend. We're on remote tomorrow for the Friday edition of the show, and I'm still deciding if we're doing a Saturday show. It just depends, but we're going down to Arizona. We have business, and I got stuff I got to do down there this weekend, so we'll be on tomorrow. We'll just be using the remote equipment tomorrow, which everybody loves. I'd love to do it from outside, although it's going to be like 5 million degrees. The Nutter is here this morning. That's always a positive thing. So good morning. Good morning. Hurley Bird, good morning to you. It is Jeff. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. It is great to be here today, and there's a ton going on. If you're wondering what I'm doing, where I'm getting these names from, they're all in the chat room on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube. So come on over. Say hello, hang in the chat room. You can just watch the chat room. You don't have to participate, but it's a great group of people. We have a lot of fun conversations about sports and other things, and it's another bonus of the show. Now, if you're watching on X or Instagram or something, that's fine too. I'm just telling you, you can jump on over to the chat room. It's a lot of fun. So what you see in the NASCAR below me is Bay Area Sports Collective. Please make sure that you are subscribed there. That is my show. That is Tom Tolbert. That is Polly Mack and Polly Mack's Particles with Creative Tony. That is now also Rod Brooks, Quality Hang. And I watched Rod last night. He came on about 8 o'clock last night. That was very, very cool. So it was nice watching Rod Brooks, formerly of KBR. He is aboard now with the Bay Area Sports Collective. Amy G is doing a great podcast and YouTube show. So make sure that you hit that up as well. And Jeremy Affeld. Jeremy Affeld is on there. And oh, by the way, if you love to hate, Tim Kawakami was in the backyard hanging out with Tom Tolbert yesterday. Go back and watch that after my show. But that's on the Bay Area Sports Collective. So all sorts of great stuff on the Bay Area Sports Collective. Please make sure that you subscribe there. And John Lund Unleashed, the legs, as I told you, is my good friend, Dr. Jeffrey Riopelle. You can click on that QR code and right away, you can just boom, right away, you are subscribing to the channel. And there is the, I'm testing this out, this NASCAR thing that I'm doing here. That is the cover of today's show, is the Giants season collapsing with that broken bat, episode 153, right before our very eyes. All right, let's get to this, because Giants season on the brink. And early on yesterday, we're all excited, right? I wasn't even off the air on the show yet. And somebody had hit up in the chat room and said, Lamont Wade Jr. got a hit. And I'm like, I don't believe that. So, of course, we go back. I get off the air quickly. I go back to the beginning. And sure enough, Lamont Wade Jr. gets a hit. Now, I'm not going to grade these, but yes, I am. The right fielder made a horrible play for it, dove for it, actually should have actually caught it on his feet, but that's okay. We'll take it. Lamont Wade Jr., I'm sure, has hit enough hard balls and got robbed where a right fielder takes a bad angle or a bad trajectory to the ball, and there you go. Lamont Wade Jr. gets a hit, and he even got a blooper later on, and maybe this gets him going. I doubt it, but fine. So they're great. Ramos, an absolute rocket to left field. You're up 3-0. Landon Roop is pitching great. He's continuing his May, and he's pitching amazingly well. And then all of a sudden, the wheels come off for Roop. Randy Rodriguez has been so great, especially with runners on base and not allowing those inherited runners to score. He gives up a hit, and all of a sudden the Giants find themselves behind 4-3. And you're thinking to yourselves, and remember, the key number for the Giants is 4. That's what it is. They win about 70% of their games, 75% of the games, if they score 4 runs. And so that's the big key. So you're sitting there, can they get one more? Can they get one more? Can they get one more? And then that brings us to the 8th inning. And let me just pop this up, because it thoroughly confusing to me, this whole thing by Bob Melvin and what he did here. So John Brebbia, the old Giants pitching for the Tigers. Adames reaches on catcher's interference. We weren't sure if he got hit or whatever, but anyway, goes through and he reaches on catcher's interference. Does a great job on the bases on Lamont Wade Jr.'s single to left, but it was kind of a bloop. And Adames just kept on going. And they throw it through to third, and Wade goes to second base. So they're second and third, and there's nobody out. here's where the confusion starts. I know Sam Huff is not a great hitter, and I know that Patrick Bailey's a switch hitter, so put Patrick Bailey in the game. Patrick Bailey's a great defensive catcher. We all know that. He's not a great hitter, and that sure as hell isn't a great hitter right now. He's the worst hitting catcher in baseball. I don't like Sam Huff. I told you this yesterday. I'm not a big Sam Huff guy, but you know what? Sam Huff's in the game. Patrick Bailey has had many, many opportunities to knock in some key runs this year. Hasn't done it. And hasn't had really good at-bats, to be honest with you. If you want to nitpick a little bit here and you say, okay, a guy's had good at-bats, I've got a gut feel, like, I get it, right? And when Bob Melvin came aboard, when Buster came aboard, it was less about analytics and more about feel. And so maybe it was just Bob Melvin, because in the past, I'll give him credit, in the past, Patrick Bailey, despite the way he has hit in certain seasons, he comes through in big situations and has. So I get it to a certain extent, but he's having a horrible season. So I get it. Right on left, I understand. I know the analyst. I get it. But Patrick Bailey's been terrible, right-handed, left-handed, you know, cat in the hat, whatever the case may be. He's just been bad. So why not just have Sam Huff hit? I mean, that was my thought. And this is not in retrospect. This is not hindsight's 2020. I was screaming at my TV, why are you pinch hitting with Patrick Bailey here? He hasn't hit well all season long. So what does Patrick Bailey do? He flies out to left. Not only does he fly out to left, he doesn't even have an at-bat. He flies out to left on the first pitch, like, It's like, dude, work the pitcher. Relax for a minute. Get a feel. You're just coming off the bench. What are you doing? So, of course, a weak fly to left field, and there's guys on second and third. You're one run down. And, the words lie here. It was a soft fly ball to left on the first pitch. And it was just a pop. It was just beyond the shortstop. So there's no way that Willie Adames can score. Second and third, no out. Now it's second and third, one out. And they've seen one pitch, and it's this lazy fly ball to left field and a fucking horrible at bat. Sorry, but it's a joke. And Patrick Bailey should not be pinch hitting in that situation. I don't care if it's right, left. I don't care. All right. Sam Huff should have hit. I don't care. Bailey's not a hitter this year. And I don't, it's mind blowing that he went with that situation. Mind blowing. And then you get to the second guy, and it's Christian Koss, who I'm just not a big fan of. I think he's a 4A player. I don't know why he's on this team. He should be getting it back to AAA. And you have, I get it. Oh, these guys are taking it. You have Tyler Fitzgerald sitting on the bench. You have Tyler Fitzgerald right there sitting on the bench. Why are you hitting Christian Koss there? If you go by logic, and this is where, again, I'm not an overly analytical guy, but if you go by logic here, it seems like he's going by gut feel here. Because I get it, you're going right left with Patrick Bailey, even though Patrick Bailey stinks, and I don't agree with it, but that's what you did. I get it. But then that same logic would tell you that if it's between Christian Koss and Fitzgerald should be up. Oh, we're giving him the day off. Well, you were giving Patrick Bailey the day off too, but you brought him off the bench. So why not take the same logic that you just used and put Chris, you know, clearly Fitzgerald's a better hitter. Now, I don't know if he does anything, but I know Koss isn't, and he strikes out swinging. And then Yastrzemski, who's starting to do this, we were waiting for it. He's like, ooh. And we're like, oh, my God, Yastrzemski's having a year. We knew this was coming. I'm not surprised by it. I'm not upset by it. But, again, just a weak, weak, weak grounder to first. Neither of those at-bats were anything. It was Patrick Bailey, first pitch swinging with a lazy fly, not even to left. It was just barely beyond the shortstop, so you can't score. Koss tries to do a safety squeeze early in that at bat, ends up striking out. And Yastrzemski's starting to go down to the mean, and it was just the most unharmful, easy little trickler to first base. And those are the three at bats when you're down 4-3 in the eighth inning. It was pathetic. It was awful. And two of those three at bats, I questioned Bob Melvin. I don't know why you're pinch hitting Patrick Bailey. He can't hit. Christian Koss, I don't know why you're not going to Fitzgerald in that situation or anybody else. Christian Koss is one of your worst hitters, and he's inexperienced. And then Mike Yastrzemski, like I said, I like Mike Yastrzemski, but I know what he is. So what you're starting to get now is Mike Yastrzemski starting to struggle, your first baseman. I don't care if he got two hits last night. What's he hitting? 173. I'm sorry. It's still terrible. Your second baseman's giving you no power. Willie Adames got on because of catcher's interference. He's not making anything. Give Matt Chapman credit. Matt Chapman's starting to swing the stick a little bit. And Ramos all season long has been solid. And I didn't expect the guy that's got off to the start that he got off to, Jung Hoo Lee, to be continuing, but he's solid enough. So, look, they have major problems on the offense, and that's why I said it, right? You know, are they on the verge? Because, look, they're still right there, but we talk about this every single day. And let's take that off the screen because it's vomit-inducing. We talk about this every single day. You know, and we talk about this every single year, the offense. Okay, you're going to stick Patrick Bailey in there. I get it, but you don't have to pinch hit him in a game. I'm not encouraged by the Montway Jr. I don't know what Bob is doing by having Christian Kloss come to the plate. Detroit's a good team. You're down one run. You got a good enough pitching performance. It wasn't great. That's what you're going to get out of your number five. Landon Roop is a number five starter, and he had a great start. But you know what is also funny? I was watching the postgame, and I love Sean Estes, but they're sitting there saying, if not for that one inning. That's what baseball's about. That's what sport's about. Sports is about one play. One inning, one hitter, you know, one play in a football game, one shot in a basketball game, like at the professional level, because the line is so thin, that's what it's about. So Landon Roop, I give him credit for most of the innings he pitched yesterday, but he lost it. And then what's unfortunate about it is that the bullpen is really, really good, the best bullpen in baseball right now, but they've got to be perfect, and they're not going to be. I've been telling you that all season long. The wheels are going to start to come off. Randy Rodriguez is really, really good, but you can't expect Randy Rodriguez to come into every situation and not allow any inherited runners to score. So Randy Rodriguez had to go into the game yesterday in a tough situation and be perfect. And I'm sorry, he's been great this year, but he's not going to be perfect every single time. So to a certain extent, he let him down, but that's going to happen throughout a season. So that happened. But he's got to be perfect, and Landon Roop's got to be perfect. And they get three runs, and then the faucet gets shut off, and they can't score anymore. Second and third, eighth inning. He sends up Patrick Bailey as a pinch hitter who has a horrible at-bat. He sends up Christian Kloss after trying to a safety squeeze. If you're going to go with some gimmicky safety squeeze, then doesn't that tell you that Christian Kloss shouldn't be up there? And maybe, just maybe, you should have went somewhere else with that at-bat. And then, like I said, Mike Yastrzemski got off to a great start. I know what Mike Yastrzemski is. I'm not pissed off about it. I knew that he was going to go like this. I knew what he was going to be. We know what he is. He's a really, really, really good defensive right fielder who could play all of the outfield positions and would be an amazing fourth outfielder on a really good baseball team. But you got to do better. And we're going to start to see that too, is that Mike Yastrzemski is going to go to the mean. And I'm going to start looking at that going, okay, well, if you're not going to do anything about first base, then do something about your right fielder. He'd be a great fourth outfielder. He really would. He's a really good defensive player. He could still probably get 400 bats. You could play him in center sometimes, give Jung-Hoo Lee a break. You could play him in left sometimes. You could play him at right. You can DH him sometimes. He can get enough at bats. But if you're not going to upgrade first base and you can't find somebody there, then you better start looking at outfielders. You got to do something about this offense. You cannot sit here, given that you've given the division to the Dodgers already, and you're going to start going up against all these teams. Detroit's a really good team. Don't get me wrong. They're a really good team. But that you were good enough yesterday to win with some decent tweaks that your manager did not do. That's what it came down to. Anyway, that eighth inning was terrible. All right, we're at Bryce Eldridge at some point. Let me give you a little video here because this will get you all excited. And I'm not, you know, I don't know where Bryce Eldridge is in his rehab. He was injured. He hit that first home run in spring training. Everybody got excited. I've also been told that he's a liability at first base defensively. So anybody who thinks they're just going to stick him in first at first base, he would DH and Wilmer Flores would play first. But it's not beyond to me the realm of possibility that he could come up this year. This is what he did yesterday at AA Richmond.
It's crushed way back over to right field. De La Cruz at the wall. It's over his head and gone. Bryce Eldridge leaves the diamond again.
He's got 9 home runs on the season. He's still rehabbing. I'm not saying he's ready to go. I have no idea what's going on with him. Keith Law just came out with his top 50. Keith Law, formerly of ESPN, former scout, front office guy, most notably with Toronto, but has written for years and years in the media about the minor leagues. I don't know if you value his opinion or not, but there he is. He has Bryce Eldridge in his latest, which came out this morning, as 22 in his top 50. So preseason rank was 29, so he's even actually moved him up 7 spots. Look, I don't know where Bryce Eldridge is. I'm not going to sit there. Well, he's in Richmond. but I'm not, I don't know where he is in terms of his process of coming back from rehab. My double A pitching and major league pitching is totally different. But I guess my question would be, at what point do you become so desperate that you don't want to make a trade or can't make a trade at first base, like my Rhys Hoskins idea that I keep bringing up? Or there's not somebody at AAA, like I said, where it's, I don't know, Luciano, could he play, could he DH and Wilmer's at first? Like, you can't play Wilmer that much. Can Casey Schmidt? I talked about this over the last couple of days. They're going to exhaust everything internally, not named Bryce Eldridge, Freudian slip Bryce Harper, not named Bryce Eldridge. And then at some point, they may become so desperate that they'll just say, okay, Bryce Eldridge. But also what's starting to pop its head out there too is, okay, Yastrzemski's going to start going like this. Do you start looking at the outfield market? Like, you've got to really look at everything to fix this offense, because while I put on there, is the Giants season collapsing? If that's too strong of a term for you, and I understand that, then it's certainly on the verge. And let me just pop up the schedule right here. Let me share my screen with you, if I could. And just start looking at what's going on as far as the upcoming schedule is concerned, because they've got Miami coming up, and that should be something where you're like, okay, let's get back on track. As far as the, you know, look, Detroit's tough. I'm not going to say they're not. Where the heck is that schedule? I was just looking at it. I know it's here. Hang on. I got like 19 windows open. And so I gotta find this whole thing. There's probable pitchers. I don't know. Maybe I didn't do it. Just because I don't want to let you down completely. There's your probable pitcher. So Kyle Harrison, to be determined, Robbie Ray, Hayden Birdsong. Again, I'm looking at the pitching and I'm going, this is good enough. You know, let's see what Kyle Harrison does. I'm excited about that. Robbie Ray, I was giving my friends grief in Seattle about that Mitch Haniger trade. Awesome. Hayden Birdsong, I think for every time he goes out there, he's going to get better and better and better and better. But the bottom line to the whole thing is, and I can just tell you the schedule because I know it off the top of my head. So you've got Miami coming in, then you go home. And then it becomes the Padres. That's going to be really tough. You have Atlanta. That's going to be tough. You have Colorado, so you get a bit of a respite there. But then the Dodgers come. So you get a break here against Miami. You get a break against Colorado. But then it's the Padres, the Braves, who I expect to be there, and the Dodgers. Those are your series coming up. So what are you going to do here? Because what it's all of a sudden become is, yeah, that's great, Dodgers. We're all going to focus on the Dodgers, but they're gone. All right, so it comes down to San Diego is a huge series. That's who you're going to be fighting with in wild card. Atlanta is a huge series. That's what you're going to be fighting with in wild card. And Colorado just flat out stinks. It's not about taking two of three from Colorado. It's about sweeping Colorado. That's where you are at this point of the season. So it's been fun so far. I'm not ripping on the Giants. My expectations jump. So if they were where Colorado is, or if they were a team where Washington is, or clearly or Pittsburgh or something, where clearly – they're not good enough. That's not the case. Starting pitching is good enough. Bullpen is best in baseball. Defense, good enough. You're sitting back with Buster Posey. By the way, John Shea wrote a great piece in the SF Standard about this new booth that they all watch from and all this kind of stuff. I highly recommend it. It's a great piece, and John Shea is a great writer. Where all the brain power of the Giants sit and watch games, it's really, really cool. They blew out a wall, and it's this big booth that they sit in adjacent to where the media sits. And by the way, best media booth in all of sports, right behind home plate. It's awesome. So it's a great place where all they sit and they congregate. So when they do sit and they congregate, here's where I'm coming from here. If this was a lost season, I wouldn't be passionate about it. I wouldn't be bitching and moaning about it. But I'm looking at this team saying, this is a playoff team. And what Buster Posey has to do is he has to look at this team now and say, okay, is Mike Yastrzemski good enough offensively? Because what happens is he's a really good defender. And if you had the Dodgers lineup, Mike Yastrzemski could be your starting right fielder. But it's starting to become obvious, as it does every single year, he's a really good fourth outfielder is what he would be. He's a great defensive player. You could get 400 at-bats. It would be no problem whatsoever. Like Michael Conforto is playing a lot for the Dodgers. I'd rather play Mike Yastrzemski than Michael Conforto. But my point is that now you may – If you can't get a first baseman, or if you're going to wait on Bryce Eldridge, that's what you've decided. Willie Adames isn't going anywhere. Chapman's not going anywhere. Bailey clearly is not going anywhere. Ramos is good. Lee's not going anywhere. Then the only positions you've got to look at offensively is first base and now right field, because Mike Yastrzemski is kind of going back to the mean. They've got to figure it out. They've got to get some sticks in here. This is our conversation every single year, but the difference is this is a really good bullpen. this is potentially a really good starting rotation. You're wasting an opportunity to be a playoff team if you don't go get some sticks. Or if you don't, as I was saying yesterday, you got to start cycling through this stuff and see who can do what. So anyway, that's where we are. Giants season on the brink. Eighth inning yesterday. Eldridge at some point. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but he looks like he's healthy. He's hit 9 home runs now at Double-A. They're not comfortable at this point. It's late in May. We're almost to June. They don't want to go overpay for a bat because the deadline is at the end of July. So you're going to be overpaying for any position. So maybe it's Eldridge. I mean, you know, you're going to try Casey Schmidt. You're going to try different guys, but all of a sudden here's Bryce Eldridge hitting his 9th home run. And it's like, I know that it sounds kind of weird, but you know what? That's what you do in these kind of seasons. Like, okay, let's just give this guy a shot and see if he's got anything. So anyway, there you go. Bob Melvin yesterday after the game, this made big news. He's making a change at closer.
Or go out for the 8th and while they're warming up for the 9th, is there like a matchup thing or is there some role changes going on?
Yeah, a little bit. Duvall's going to do the closing now. So that's why we had Walker in the 8th.
Was that sort of a decision just recently made to have?
Yeah, I made it a few days ago.
How did Walker take that?
He's fine. He just wants to pitch and help his team win.
He was so dominant last year. What do you think hasn't been as sharp for him this year?
He has, and he's pitching better. You know, today got out of a jam when he had to. But, you know, look, it can be fluid. Same thing happened last year when Duvall had it and Walker took over. So we're lucky to have two guys.
There you go. It's not that that's not big news. It is. But given what the offense is not doing, I mean, that's fine. Ryan Walker mentally, you kind of saw this coming because Ryan Walker admitted, which most players don't, that he was having some mental issues and you could see it and his stuff wasn't as good. And maybe he's just more comfortable being an 8th inning guy. It does concern me a little bit because Camilo Duvall is a roller coaster ride. Ryan Walker, when he got into the closing role last year, was pretty steady. And so it was nice. You didn't have to drink as much whiskey or beer while you're watching the 9th inning. Camilo Duvall is a roller coaster ride. I don't understand the mentality of a closer who has, I don't know, 101, 102 stuff with movement, falling in love with a slider, but that's what Duvall sometimes does. But this year he's been absolutely great, so he deserves being the closer. It's a huge role. Are they going to bring the light show back? Hell if I know. But Walker's going to be your 8th inning guy. Duvall's going to be your 9th inning guy. The only reason for concern there is, like I just said, there's a bit of uneasiness sometimes when Duvall is pitching. He's on the verge a lot. And if your bullpen, especially at the end, because what the closer is, he's the base of your house, and then you build the rest of the bullpen off of that, and everybody else knows their roles. So if he at any point starts to struggle, now all of a sudden this thing that has been rock solid in the best part of your team, which is your bullpen, if that from the back forward starts to stink, now you're in trouble. Now you need to try Randy Rodriguez, and then you try, like I said, I'm not panicking on it. You don't love it because the bullpen has been so good. And like I said, the closer is the biggest part of that whole thing. And then everybody else can kind of assume their roles from that point. If he struggled, you could see Randy Rodriguez. Hell, you might see Jordan Hicks. And then he'd be throwing, you know, 100 and something. So they've got a lot of depth in that bullpen. I'm not overly concerned, but anytime you make a change like that in a part of your team that has been the most solid part of your team, you just got to kind of watch it. That's all I'm saying. I'm not worried about it. I'm not panicking about anything. I'm just saying for right now, just put it in the back of your mind that all of a sudden, if Duvall starts to struggle, are they going to have to start screwing around and figuring out roles? And this has been the best part of their team. So that's all I'm saying. Keep an eye on it. But for right now, not a huge thing. All right. So that's what's going on as far as the Giants are concerned. Episode 153, Giants season on the brink. The offense, again, they get 3 runs and then the 8th inning happens. Bob Melvin's got to take some responsibility for that. Eldridge, at some point, will they get that desperate? I think they might. And the closer situation just changed. Duvall in the 9th, Ryan Walker in the 8th. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Somebody out of Kevin Bacon, by the way, there's a new show out on, is it Apple? It's like a 5 show series, and it's got Kevin Bacon as the like multi-billionaire father. Good show. We just finished watching it. What else do we got as far as the Giants are concerned? Anything on the Giants? All right, let's move on to the 49ers. Now, this is kind of interesting to me. Here, let me get this off the screen here. This is kind of interesting to me. So a few things on the 49ers as they will actually have access today to the players and for OTAs. Today will be the first day of access. So Kyle Shanahan's going to speak today. Players are going to speak today. I will have a whole recap of that either later today, depending. We're traveling tonight to Arizona, but tomorrow for sure I will have it for you. But if keep those alerts on, because I may have a chance to do it tonight, and I would like to, even a short, quick one I might. So keep your alerts on depending on my time schedule. I'll try to make that happen. All right, a few 49ers things. Bill Barnwell, and this just tells you, I don't know why it drives me so crazy. It shouldn't. I should just relax. But the local media does such a great job when it comes to the NFL versus the national media, because this is Bill Barnwell, and he did a whole piece on all 32 teams, so I didn't expect it to be intricate. But he's talking about retooling and rebuilding and all these things for the 49ers. You can see the difference between rebuilding and retooling is that while doing the former, a team expects to continue to connect. The 49ers connect, blah, 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 blah. They're not retooling and they're not rebuilding. They're doing neither of those things. They're not doing either of those things. What they decided to do for the millionth time, what the 49ers decided to do is they looked at Deebo Samuel and said, best football's behind him. Looked at Javon Hargrave and said, a bust. We don't need to pay him anymore. Why are we trying to continue to fit this square peg into a round hole? Not working. Don't want to pay him. Tavarius Ward was never coming back. His wife had PTSD and left California. Wasn't coming back. Talanoa Hufanga was hurt, and they had Malik Mustafa. Still do, but Malik Mustafa, if healthy, was going to start ahead of Talanoa Hufanga. I'm telling you. So on and on and on it goes, and we've talked about Dre Greenlaw. That's the one they blew. They absolutely misread the market on that. But they looked at these players that they were overpaying, and they said, we're not paying these guys anymore. That's not a rebuild. It's not even a retool. It's just we've made a decision not to pay these players. Now, the risk that they're taking this year, there's no question, is all these rookies. And we talked about it yesterday with Matt Barrow's piece. There's like seven guys that are six of the seven are under 25. They're like 22, 23. Mikel Williams is 20. That they're going to be relying on, the two defensive linemen inside, the two rookie defensive linemen in Collins and West. Nick Martin, Upton Stout, you know, defensively. And I'm going to get into Robert Saleh in just a second. Defensively, they're relying on so many young guys that it's scary. And the reality of the situation is you cannot rely on five or six young players from the 24 and 25 draft to come through, especially this year. Mikel Williams, both defensive tackles, and Upton Stout need to be really good. And maybe Sigel, the strong safety out of Kansas State because of Malik Mustafa. How many is that? One, two, three, four, five, six. You might be counting on, well, look at, you might be counting on six rookies to be a big part of this defense. So then I found, let me see, where's the, that's Barnwell. Where's the one on Saleh? Oh, so this might have been ESPN. This might have been NFL Network, but they were talking about the best thing that every team did in the offseason. That leads me to Robert Saleh. So it says here, like the way the 49ers became less emotional with its contract decisions. That was a great, that would have been my thing, is that they got Kittle, they got Brock, and they got Warner done, and they didn't wait till July, August, or September. But he says the big move to bring Robert Saleh was, as defensive coordinator stands apart, Saleh gives San Francisco a true head coach of the defense after the team ran through three coordinators in three seasons on that side of the ball. Huge. The current defensive talent isn't as good when Saleh filled the role, blah, 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 but San Francisco couldn't have landed a better fit. So my question in this situation is, as I read that, I thought to myself, how much can he help? Because you got three, like I said, you got three rookie defensive linemen that need to start or be a big part of this thing. Mikel Williams has got to be great. So do the two defensive tackles. Martin, the linebacker, has got to be either he or Winters has to step forth and be really, really good. And then the secondary, I got to be honest, scares the hell out of me. Demo Lenore, good player, but he's got to be an outside-only corner now because Upton Stout at 5'8", 181, he's a slot. He can't play the outside, so he's going to be a slot. Trey Brown gets hurt way too much. So you're counting on a rookie in the slot. Demo Lenore probably is a better slot than he is an outside guy, but he's good outside, so he's going to be outside all the time. You're hoping that Renardo Green can take a step forth, second-year corner. Malik Mustafa is hurt. You may have to rely on like a fifth-round strong safety who is kind of inexperienced in the position anyway. And J.R. Brown, who I'm not a massive fan of and is still pretty young and is prone to making some young player mistakes. So my question is, having gone through all of that, and I'm not trying to paint this overly negative picture about the defense, but how much can Saleh help? because in the 2 years that they had very little talent before 2019, so 17 and 18, they weren't a very good defense. The defensive coordinator was Robert Saleh. And it's nothing against Saleh. It's we talk about this all the time. I don't care how talented a coach is. If you have shitty players, you're not going to be very good. Now, you might elevate, you know, Saleh might elevate bad players to this, like that much. And he might be able to, when you have really good talent, he might be able to elevate you that much, you know. But unlike offense, where Kyle Shanahan has all these different things and he can be a mad scientist about it, defensively, you can only do so many things. You can mix and match. You can change what they do, you know, core philosophically. You can change a few things like that, but they kind of do what they do, right? I mean, that's just what they do. So I'm not saying it was a bad hire. I think it's an awesome hire. But I think it's going to be an awesome hire when these guys are good and Robert Saleh can take them to great. Can Robert Saleh take potentially six rookies, having and Chris Kocurek and the staff that they have here, can they take potentially six rookies who are going to have major roles? And in Mikel Williams' case, he's going to have to start. And one of those defensive tackles, either West or Collins, they're going to have to start. And both of them are going to have to play major snaps. And Nick Martin's going to have to play a major role. And I don't know what they're going to do at strong safety. I think they're going to pick up a veteran there. But Upton Stout, and everybody's talking about all these great things, and he's feisty, he's this and that. Look, he went to a Western Kentucky, and he's 5'8", 181, and he's got to play the slot, which is one of the toughest positions to play in the league. Don't let anybody else tell you otherwise. Outside corner is easier than the slot because they can go every different way. And against, like, let's play Seattle, for example. Jackson Smith and Jigba and Cooper Kupp can play in the slot. Both of those guys. They're going to play the Rams. Rams are going to look at it and go, we can put Puka in the slot. Arizona is going to go, okay. I mean, look, Marvin Harrison doesn't play in the slot a lot, but, I mean, they've got guys who can do it. But if they've got a rookie that's 5'8", 181 out of Western Kentucky, guess what? Guess who the number one target is going to be on the 49ers defense? Well, it's probably going to be Nick Martin. Can he cover in space? And it's going to be Upton Stout. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to put guys in the slot and say, can this kid out of Western Kentucky, who everybody's been saying all these great things about, I'd put size in the slot. I mean, if I'm Seattle, Cooper Kupp is what, 6'2" and about 190 pounds? Like, I'm going to put, or 200 pounds. I'm going to put Cooper Kupp in the slot. And I'm going to use size. Arizona used to use Larry Fitzgerald in the slot. Like, it's not just anymore. It's not just the quick guys that are going into the slot, the smaller, quicker guys. They do that. But if they've got a matchup advantage size-wise, they'll put size into the slot. And that's what they're going to do against this kid. And that's what I'm talking about. And he's going to make mistakes. That's what rookies do. So I go back to, I love that Robert Saleh is the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, but he's not going to tackle anybody. He's not going to sack anybody. He's not going to knock any passes away. He's not covering anybody. I don't know. I think it's great. I love it. That was the best move they could have made. It is going to improve the defense. He can take it from here to here, but is it going to be from here to here or here to here? That's the difference to me. All right, what else do we have? So, let me pop this up. So I like this guy. This guy's named Seth Walder. And again, analytics, you can say whatever you want about it, but he does the analytics, the FPI ratings for the 2025 season. And I was expecting him, and this guy's a great follow, by the way. And I do follow him. I don't know why it popped up that I don't, but I do. But he's got the rankings, basically, and he goes through the numbers. Eagles 1, Chiefs 2, that was the Super Bowl. I don't have an issue with it. Ravens 3, okay. Lions really, really good. Bills 5, Commanders. I'll make a prediction right now. They just seem ready for a fall. That's a good team. Don't get me wrong, and I think Jaden Daniels is great. And I could be 100% wrong. I don't think Commanders are going to be 6, but we'll see. Bengals 7, they had a terrible start to last year. Packers 8, I think it's a bit high. Harbaugh's Chargers 9, bit high. Rams 10, I'd probably go higher with the Rams. But what's interesting to me is if you look at the NFC West, Rams 10, Niners 11, all the way to 21 for Seattle and 20 for the Cardinals. I would think Seattle's higher than that, and the Cardinals are about right. I just am not a huge Cardinals guy. But let's focus on the 49ers, obviously. That seems like a fair number for me. And what's funny about it is for all, especially the national media, panicking on the 49ers, and they did stupid things, and they didn't have a great offseason, and this, that, and the other. All of a sudden, you look at it and you go, well, geez, they do have Purdy, and they do have Kittle, and they do have Warner, and they do have McCaffrey, and they do have Jennings, and they do have You know, they've got a lot of talent. They're going to score points. I've said that time and time, and they're going to score points. So for the 49ers to be analytically rated 11 at this point, and Seth Walder does a really good job, and he's a fun interview. I got to get him on. I think that's about fair. I don't know if you would put the Niners higher, lower, but I think that's actually maybe a little bit high. And I know that fans love – let me pop this off the screen. I know that fans love when the national media ranks them highly, you know, gives them a lot of love. I'm the opposite. I like when the national media underrates my team, because that's when I can sneak up on people like Washington this year. That's why I'm saying they have them six. I like Jaden Daniels. We'll see. The Texans had a really good quarterback. His rookie year played well. Last year, kind of a slip back. What the league does is they say, okay, you had a great year, and Jaden Daniels has great composure, and he looks really good, and he makes good decisions, and now he gets Debo, which I don't know that that's a positive, but we'll see, and all these different things. But then you don't sneak up on anybody anymore. You know, you're in with Philly. They're great. Dallas, are they going to be better? We'll see. At least Dak Prescott's going to be back. Is that going to make them a little bit tougher? I don't think the Giants are going to be any good. But the NFC is tough. And so where they sit and they say Washington 6, I think we'll see. I think teams will be geared up. I don't want it, like, if I'm a fan of a team, I don't want the media, like if I'm a fan of Washington, I don't want the national media to put me at 6. I want them to put me at 26. I don't want the Niners, honestly, I don't want the Niners to be at 11. I want all the national media going, oh, these guys, they're washed and they're done and they're old and they're this and they're that. Put me at 20, man. Put me where Arizona is. Put me where Seattle is at like 20 or 21. I want to be underrated. I don't want to be overrated. I don't want a target on my back. Having said that, though, what's funny about it is that the Warriors, as long as they have Steph Curry, will have a target on their back. Doesn't matter. So as long as the 49ers are the 49ers and they have those type of players that I just mentioned, plus Kyle Shanahan coaching them, no one will take that. No one will underrate the 49ers. No one that matters. I don't care what Screamin' A thinks. I don't care what Dan Orlovsky thinks. I don't care what Mike Greenberg thinks. I don't care what anybody on Fox thinks. I didn't even know they had a network. But although they can sit there and yip-yap, it doesn't matter. When the 49ers walk into a stadium, nobody underrates them. Because Kyle Shanahan walks onto the field, and so does McCaffrey, and so does Kittle, and so does Bosa, and so does et cetera, and so does Warner, so does Purdy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's this big debate, overpaid Purdy, underpaid Purdy, Purdy top 10, Purdy elite. Teams know, because I've talked to the people that matter. They know. They walk into a stadium, and they're taken 100% seriously. This team can beat us easily. Look at all the talent. Like, they look across when teams are warming up and they go, damn, they got a lot of talent. So anybody who matters doesn't underestimate the 49ers. So that's probably reflective of that Seth Walder just put them 11th, because they're coming off a 6-11 season. And yet, let me pop that up one more time. Or let me move myself, probably is what I need to do. Let's see, did it right there. Oh, it didn't pop up. I thought I was going to do something real fancy. There it is right there. To me, that's a 6-11 football team. Eagles, Chiefs, Ravens, Lions, Bills, Commanders, Chargers, Rams. Those are all playoff teams ahead of you, except for a couple. And then you're basically the highest rated of the teams that didn't make the playoffs. And look at that. I mean, Vikings made the playoffs. Bucks made the playoffs. You know, Broncos made the playoffs. I mean, those were playoff teams. And yet, there you are sitting there at 11. So that shows you the respect that, you know, the rest of the league has. And then the yip-yappers can say whatever they want. But 11th, I was hoping they'd be a little bit lower, to be honest with you. Worse, however you want to say it. 49ers 11th, solid difference. We did. Any more thoughts on the 49ers? And again, let me recap that whole thing. They are talking to the media. OTA's talking to the media for the first time. And we'll get some of that together for you, and we'll opine on that. So we'll either do that as a separate show later on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube and the Bay Area Sports Collective exclusively, or we'll do that tomorrow on the Friday edition of the show. Oh, my God, today's Thursday, right? Friday edition of the show. So there you go. I'm going to flip to the NBA in just one second. Anything else on the 49ers that people would like? What are we talking about here? See, this is what I'm talking about in terms of the random stuff on the show. Like, I totally miss out on this stuff, and then stuff like this comes up, and I'm like, I don't know what's going on. I have no idea what's going on here. Let's see. Did anything else? All right. Let's move to the NBA. Oh, by the way, do remember that if you want your thoughts completely 100% questions, comments, thoughts on the show, hit me with a super and we'll put those on the screen. It's a good time, what, 50 minutes into the show to tell you and to welcome you to the show if you're just joining us. Maybe you're watching on Instagram. Maybe you're watching on X at John Lund Radio. Thanks for joining us. Maybe you're on LinkedIn or another place, another platform. We are on John Lund Unleashed on YouTube and the Bay Area Sports Collective on YouTube, both of those channels. So if you would subscribe, give us a like there and make sure there's those alerts are on. That would be great. Plus, later on, if you're watching the show later, welcome. Or if you're listening on the podcast, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcast, that is great as well. So welcome to the show. All right, we're to the NBA portion of the program. And here's what scares me if I'm a Warriors fan. Because you're thinking to yourself, well, you know, they could do this and they could do that and they could do this and they could do that. But Sam Presti, the guy who put this team together, is a former San Antonio Spurs executive. And we know how long the Spurs went on their run. So Sam Presti is probably not going to do something stupid now. Could they potentially in the offseason, whether they win the championship or not, get in on a Giannis sweepstakes or somebody like that? It doesn't seem likely just because they've already got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and they seem to have in Gilgeous-Alexander and Williams are the 1-2. Now, you're not trading Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for anybody. He's the MVP and possibly could be the MVP of the NBA final. He'd be on top of the NBA world. He's not going anywhere. Jalen Williams, would you trade him for somebody? Boy, that would have to be a hell of a deal. So you seem like your first two are set. Now, could you take and Holmgren is really good defensively. You wouldn't really want to trade him, but I think it would start there. Chet Holmgren or some of these other guys that give Oklahoma City depth. Would they go out and, you know, get a veteran like that? Maybe. Or they could just be patient. And that's what the Warriors were when they're in their dynasty. That's what the Spurs were. They were kind of just patient. You can make minor moves, but it seems to me that Oklahoma City is going to be good for a long time. How do I know that? The oldest player on OKC's roster, and if you're watching on the podcast or listening on the podcast, I've popped this up. The oldest player on OKC's roster is Alex Caruso. It says the 98 Bulls average 32.1. It's a new day where young players thrive in pace and space era. It says the Gen Z takeover is here. 24.7 posed. They are poised to be the youngest NBA champ in almost 50 years. 24.7 is the average age of the Oklahoma City player. So if they were to win this championship and get the confidence that comes along with it, I'm really big in that. They're already in the finals, obviously. If they lose, it's still good for them to get that experience, but I don't think they're going to lose. The whole time I've sat there and thought, well, I think the Knicks could beat them. I don't think the Pacers can. Just matchup-wise. So all of a sudden, Oklahoma City is going to be the NBA champs, and their average age is 24.7. So unless you screw this thing up, and like I said, Sam Presti was with the Spurs, and he's accumulated all these draft picks that they still have, by the way. And so they've got the ability to move around in the draft still, to make moves still, to look at it and say, okay, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's our rock. He's going to be our number one. And Jalen Williams, unless someone were to blow us away with a deal for a real big superstar, he's our number two. Why would we do anything now? We just won a championship with this core, a young core. Why would we do anything now to try to speed up any kind of a process and bring in a superstar player who could, yeah, maybe cement more championships for us in the short term? But our average age is 24.7. We could run this thing for 10, and then if we, you know, do smart things, we could be at San Antonio. We could be a Golden State. We can do this thing for 10 or 15 years. And right now you're looking at Oklahoma City and you're going, whoa, this could get scary. Their average age is 24.7. You saw that. I know that. I keep saying that, but it still blows my mind. Poised to be the youngest NBA champ in almost 50 years, 24.7. So we could be looking at a team on the verge of one of these runs. Now, what does that matter? Great. Good for Oklahoma City. Well, A, it pisses me off because it should be Seattle's team, but whatever. I should have never taken the Sonics. But number two, you're the Warriors, right? And you're sitting here and you're going, okay, we're going to retool. We're gonna bring in a big. We're going to use Jonathan Kuminga. We're going to get a big. Okay, we got said big. I don't know. Who's it going to be? Jared Allen, Miles Turner, whatever. Bobby Portis, Naz Reid, Or are they going to, they're just going to sign Brook Lopez? I mean, whatever, whatever name turns your crank. Is that going to beat Oklahoma City? Is that going to stop this train that is starting to roll? Because what's going to happen is they're going to get a championship under their belt, and it just changes mentality. Now you got to knock out the champ. They've been there. They've done that. They don't have any question in their mind. Once the Warriors won one, it was like, uh-oh. That's what happens. Once San Antonio wins one, once you win a championship, it doesn't matter the professional sport. Once Brady, once the Patriots won one, it was like, we know we can do it. We have the ultimate confidence in the back of our mind. So now you've taken the team with the most talent, and you've given him the confidence of having won a championship at that early age, and all of a sudden you're going, who's going to beat him? I mean, seriously, unless there's an injury, which always could happen, who's beating Oklahoma City over the next number of years? And that becomes a problem for not only, you know, the Warriors, it's the rest of the league, but now the Warriors are like, okay, we're going to make one last run of this. We spent all this money, and we got Jimmy Butler. I'm going to go get a big in the offseason. We're going to spend all this money. And you're going to inevitably in the Western Conference run into Oklahoma City unless there's an injury. And they're going to get better, and they're going to get more confident. That's what's scary. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not as good as he's going to be. Jalen Williams is not at his peak. Chet Holmgren is not as good as he's going to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These guys are going to get better and better and better, and they still have the leverage of more picks, and they have the brains of a guy who's been part of a dynasty before. He was with the Spurs when they were doing these things. So he's not going to panic and go, okay, we won one, and now let's, you know, overhaul the whole thing. Now, having said that, when Farhan's Giants won 107 games and then sat on his hands, you can't do that either. They didn't win a championship. They won 107 games. The best time to get your team better is when you're really good. And then players are like, well, I want to go to Oklahoma City. Like, there's going to be now, and they don't have this now. They have guys like Hartenstein and things like that, but they don't have the guy going, hey, can I jump aboard this? That veteran guy who's going to help them. All of a sudden, it's like, I'll play a lesser role to go to Oklahoma City. So now you got all these young guys, and you're going to want veterans jumping aboard. Guys who would never consider Oklahoma City. Like, Oklahoma City? I'm not playing freaking Oklahoma City. You insane? But now they're like, well, they're a championship contender. The guys will go anywhere for that. You know, nobody really wants to play in Oklahoma City, but they'll play for that. All of a sudden, it's a veteran guy going, yeah, sure, I'll play for a vet minimum. I'll play for a mid-level. I'll play for a... Now, all of a sudden, they get better. This is as bad, I think, and they're probably going to win the championship. This is as bad as Oklahoma City's going to be. Because all of a sudden, their guys have gotten that confidence, the young players. Average age 24.7, that means you're not at your pinnacle yet. You're playing your best basketball at 27 or 28. They're a couple years away from that. It's scary. It's scary for the rest of the league. It's scary for a team like the Warriors saying, hey, you know what? We're going to try one more time. We're going to try one more run at this thing. Really? With that standing in your way? That's a monstrosity. They're not even getting started yet. They're going to win a championship this year. And their average age is 24.7. That's scary for the rest of the NBA and especially for the Western Conference. Because if you're the Warriors making one last run, your timing might not be so great. Think about how many championships Jordan denied players. Guys like Charles Barkley and John Stockton and Karl Malone and Gary Payton and all, you know, he denied all those players. Think about Steph Curry, all the championships he's denied players. I mean, LeBron's gotten a handful, but he could add a lot more, but there was a guy named Curry standing in his way, denied. San Antonio Spurs, denied. Michael Jordan, denied. That's what happens is you get a roadblock in the way, and you could be a really great player and a good team, and you're not winning championships because you've got a giant roadblock in the way, like San Antonio was or Chicago was, some of these teams. And all of a sudden, you're looking at this going, you know, the Lakers. And all of a sudden, you're looking at this going, who's beating OKC over the next, I don't know, 5-10 years? I mean, the Warriors have two more years left. It's stated. Kerr's contract, Jimmy's contract, Curry's contract, plus age is going to catch up with them. Draymond's contract. It's 2 years. In 2 years, is Oklahoma City going to be better or worse? They're going to be better. So it may just be, I guess my overall point here is, A, that Oklahoma City is on the verge of a dynasty, but B, if you're the Warriors trying to get that last one, the irony is you blocked so many players and teams from winning championships during your run that at the end, when you're trying to eke and squeeze one last one out, there's a team that's really young, younger than the Warriors were when they started this whole thing, And they don't look like, unless there's a major injury or a stupid screw-up by a guy who's already been there before in Sam Presti, who's done this, that unless they do a stupid move or get hurt, they're going to be a massive roadblock in your way and prevent you from coming close to winning another one. They're that good. OKC on the verge. Where was this Minnesota team? So I've gotten a lot of response from people saying, well, geez, if this was the Minnesota team that played the Warriors would have beat him with Steph Curry. I still doubt it. Sorry. I still doubt that they would have beat him just because, you know, like Julius Randle sucked in the series. Yeah, because Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein. Rudy Gobert disappeared in the series because of those two guys. Anthony Edwards disappeared in the series. They defended him really, really well. And like, some of it was on him, but they had the defenders to defend him. It's about matchups. The Warriors didn't have players to defend Anthony Edwards. I thought they did, but they didn't. They had no size inside to deal with Julius Randle. Julius Randle looked like one of the top five players in the league against the Warriors. They didn't have anybody to contend with him. Oklahoma City was like, Chet Holmgren's way too long for that dude. That's the whole point, is you've got to go out, you've got to get some length and size in the offseason. It's about matchups. They still wouldn't have beat Minnesota with Steph Curry. There were too many matchup advantages for Minnesota. And then those matchup advantages were gone against Oklahoma City. And it's not how bad, and people are, they do this all the time, especially in the national media. You know, blame, 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 blame. And it ain't about blaming Minnesota because they're not good. It's about looking at Oklahoma City and saying they are that good. Oklahoma City has all the bases covered here. How are you going to beat them? Honestly, they're like this ship that it's like, where's the kryptonite here? How do we get into this thing? Where's the weak spot? I mean, I'm not saying they're perfect, but I mean, you look at them right now and it's like they've got size, they've got, you know, perimeter players, they've got depth, they've got shooting, they've got defense, they score, you know, they've got athleticism. Like, they've got everything that we're scratching our head going, can the Warriors get some more athleticism? Can the Warriors get some more length? Can the Warriors get some more size? Oklahoma City has all of it. So it wasn't that Minnesota, you know, at the end of the day, they look terrible. But it's because Oklahoma City was that good. You know, and so people have hit me up and gone, well, do you think the Warriors with Steph Curry would have beaten Minnesota? I don't. I still think that the size was too much of a too much to overcome. And, you know, we'll never know. And if you wanted to debate me and say, but Steph would have done A, B, C, and D, that's why I love having the chat room here and have differing comments, and hit my comments if you're listening later or you want to watch or watching later, or if you want to hit me up on the comments, hit them up right underneath the show. I'd love to get your thoughts on it. And you could make a compelling case where I could go, hey, you might be right that Steph Curry's presence would have beaten Minnesota. Maybe. I mean, it changes everything on the offensive end of the court. We know that. I mean, it tilts the entire court. There's a lot to be said for it. I still think there were too many matchup advantages, but I'm not looking back because Minnesota stunk against Oklahoma City and said, well, Minnesota clearly didn't deserve to be there. No, Oklahoma City's that good. We just got done talking about it. Oklahoma City's that good. So, no, I still don't think they would have beat him. I hate continuing to bring this up because I love Inside the NBA, and I did a whole rant on this yesterday, so I'm going to make this short. This was the piece in The Athletic. Nostalgia can return, but the good times are often over. Before we know, it's important to take the time to appreciate greatness while we can. And the latest NBA broadcast, the last NBA broadcast on TNT, could come at any time, including tonight. It's just moving to ESPN. It's not over. Nostalgia can return, but the good times are often over before we know it. It's not over. Over? Did you say over? It's not over. It's moving to ESPN. That's all it's doing. That's all it's doing. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get so mad over it, but it's like, it's not ending. It's not ending. You know, that whole thing, you don't know what you got till it's gone. It's not gone. Like, everybody, there's all these pieces in The Athletic and all over the country, and people are talking about it and everything. It's like, it's moving to ESPN. And as I said yesterday, if you're concerned they're going to screw it up, that the mouse is going to screw it up, that ESPN is going to screw it up, then you've got a valid point. But if they don't touch it, then it'll be fine. But we all know what corporations do. Oh, you know, I got this now. You know, they'll buy something. They'll buy a recipe. They'll buy, you know, restaurants. Oh, let's expand all these restaurants. Oh, we lost that, you know, that field to that restaurant. You know, it happens all the time. It happens in industry. It happens in restaurants. It happens in sports. It happens in, you know, they like, that's what I'm saying about Oklahoma City. As long as Oklahoma City doesn't screw it up, Oklahoma City's probably got a dynasty on their hands. But they could screw it up. The same thing with major corporations. ESPN could screw it up. All we want to do is put on Kendrick Perkins once a week. Done. All we want to do is put Screaming A on once a week. Done. Like that, it's that much. That line is that thin. I've been on shows that chemistry-wise, you just know. You sit in there, those shows. You sit on those shows and you go, this is it. This is going to be big. I've been on those shows. And I've also been on shows where day one, I'm going, oh my God, this is never going to work. I'm getting fired. Like that's what it is. Chemistry, just like any relationship you have in your life, you know it right away. And we know it. We're watching it. It's great. But it's not going away. I don't understand. I don't. Nostalgia can return, but the good times are often over. Before we know it, it's important to take the time to appreciate greatness. Show's not ending, just so you know. Show's not ending. Show's not ending. It could screw it up, but show's not ending. Random things. What other random things? Because I do have one sweet, clean family friend, the Caboose Pistol. Believe me, if that is your viewpoint that ESPN will manage to screw it up, that scares me to death. I shouldn't care. I have no vested interest in this show, but that's what's, yeah, I hate it. That scares me. If that's your angle, cool. But if your angle is it's going away, never to return, it's like, no, it's not going away. Let's see. Inside, it actually has to be numerous times. They do it in Punk. It's pretty funny. I don't want him on at all. I don't want him on all at all. I just don't. I can't do it. You know my thoughts on Screaming A. I've said it a million times. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. He has changed what media is. I think it's sad. And I'm not a get off my lawn guy. I want to have a bunch of fun and everything like that. But every show he's on to me is worse. But I respect what he has done because he's making like 20 million bucks a year and he found a way to do it. And somehow, I don't know who, it's like I said, it's like Britney Spears or any kind of pop star that I'm like, I don't get it. Like even Taylor Swift, like I don't get it. I'm not a fan. And so, but somebody's got to be listening. Like maybe their windows are up in their car. I always think that like somebody's listening to Britney Spears. Somebody's listening to Taylor Swift. Somebody's listening to Cowboy Carter. Like somebody is. It's not me. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It's like, who's doing this? Who's making these people huge? I don't know. Because he makes my ears bleed. His opinion is bought and paid for, blah, blah, blah. I've said it a million times. I don't get it. But I do respect him because the very fact that he's making $20 million a year, the research, and I've told you this a million times because I worked for ESPN for years, the research which ESPN does oodles and oodles and oodles of must tell them that he's popular. The ratings, the numbers, the everything. I think he's a joke, to be honest with you. I think it's a joke. The way he like walks around and they'll have a camera on him walking into arena and stuff. It's like, who's the... He's so irrelevant, and you only make people in the media as relevant as personally as you do. You either watch him, consume what they do, et cetera. I don't. I don't consume anything he does. Any show he's on, I don't watch. Anytime he makes an appearance, NBA adjacent, I just wait till the game comes on. And I'll record the game, stop it when he starts to talk. I'll come back and zip to when the game starts. I never consume his product, but someone does. But it doesn't mean I don't respect what he does because he's clearly found himself. Not, I was going to say a niche. It's not even a niche. When you're paying somebody $20 million, it's widespread popularity. I don't consume it, but someone does. Let's see. Oh, that point was he's been on there. If they put him on that show, they're going to be jumping the shark and they're going to find out very, very quickly. And those guys are all great together. And I have a feeling that Charles, as part of his deal, because he's big enough to do this, can those guys, but specifically Charles, can decide who's on the show and who's not. Because if I'm him, I'm not putting that jackass on my show. I'm not putting Perkins on. I'm not putting Screaming A on. I'm not putting on, you know, whomever. I'm just not doing it. The chemistry's too good. I'm just not risking it. So who knows? I have no idea on that front. So like I said, if your concern is the show is going to get screwed up because ESPN is going to screw it up, that's valid. If it's stuff that's being written like this, I'm just like, what? Because I'm not romantic about TNT. I don't care. Like, you know, when it, whether a college football game on a Saturday is on ESPN or CBS or NBC, I don't care. Like, am I getting the game or not? You know, whether a game, whether an NBA playoff game, and it does kind of matter, to be honest with you. I think that the TNT, like a Kevin Harlan called game, and I love Mike Breen, but I don't love the analysts on ESPN. Like, yeah, does that a little bit make a difference to me? Yeah, it does. But generally speaking, whether a game's on NBC, CBS, ESPN, whatever, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't really care. So the fact that the NBA is going from TNT to NBC, what, has NBC not shown the ability to be able to produce professional sports content? I mean, I grew up and NBC did a pretty fine job on the NBC, on the NBA. Other than having a dead guy as the voice of the NBA, that's a little weird, but I'll get used to it. I'll get over it. I mean, other than that, I don't expect it to be a worse product. I don't know who's going to call the games, but even if it's not as good as Kevin Harlan, and I find it hard to believe it will be, it's not like I'm not going to watch it. I might turn down the sound. I don't know. It's not going to make that big of a difference to me. I mean, honestly, whether it's on a certain network or not, like on a Sunday when you're watching the NFL, does it make a difference to you whether it's on ABC, ESPN, NBC, CBS, Fox? Like, does it? I don't know, not really. I mean, we talked a lot about Tom Brady because it was Tom Brady's first year in the booth and people analyze Tom Brady, things like that. You might have a certain broadcaster that you like better than others. You might not like Joe Buck and Troy Aikman on, you know, Monday Night Football. That's fine, but you're still going to watch. You know, is Sunday Night Football better? Is Thursday Night, like Thursday Night Football, I like Al Michaels. Kirk Herbstreit, I think, is a college guy. But again, does it make me not watch, you know? I mean, people get mad when it's on Amazon or Netflix or something because they gotta take an extra step. I get it, but you still watch the game, you know. TNT, like I said before, before TNT got the NBA, I said this yesterday. It's like, Roadhouse is on, like that's on TNT on a Sunday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's what it used to be. So now that TNT is going to NBC and this show is going to ESPN, what the hell's the difference? Nothing. I'm going to watch the same thing, and it's not going to be any different to me. Anyway, I've talked way too long about that. All right, let's do this. I've got a sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol, and I got to be honest, this is a new one for me. It's a weird one. So let me give you the sweet, clean, family-friendly Caboose pistol open here, and this is how we end every show if you're new around here, and then we'll go out to the lines. And again, if you want to get any questions, comments, thoughts, hit me up with a super. Make sure you are subscribed. Get those alerts on, and please hit us with a like today. Here is your Caboose pistol.
John Lund Unleashed presents the Caboose pistol.
Wedged in the crack of her buttocks.
Somehow, someway, Lundo thinks this is the best way to leave a final impression on you for the day.
The old Caboose pistol. Everybody has one.
Did you say Caboose
pistol? I know some women who could hide a machine gun in there.
Yeah.
Leave me out of this, you weirdo. Here's John. Here's John.
Ah, thank you. Thank you, Dame. Caboose Red Bull. So, I don't know how you feel about energy drinks. I'll drink one every once in a while. I told you this. My doctor told me to stop. He said, what happened? Did I hit something? That was weird. Hopefully we're still on the air. I think we're still on the air. Yeah, I hit something weird, and that cut that thing rather abruptly. Yeah, it looks like we're still in the air, though. All right, so I don't know how you feel about energy drinks. My doctor told me that I got to stop drinking them. He said that drink a cup of coffee every day, which I have to have. And then I'm trying to replace energy drinks with water. It's just not the same thing, but I'm trying to chug as much water as I possibly can because I was chugging them at a pretty good clip. Celsius just came out with a cherry cola flavor, which again, no sugar, nothing. It's got all these things in it, and I'm not even supposed to chug those, but those are so good. But anyway, not a huge Red Bull guy. The flavor of Red Bull has never gotten me. Monster will do like an orange version. And again, all these are now sugar-free. So when they first came out, yeah, you're chugging like, I don't know, 30 carbs, 30 sugars. It's like just drinking a big soda. So, you know, I was never really into it. And then they went to the zero versions of it and like those and kind of got addicted to them like a lot of people did. But I've never been a Red Bull guy. Red Bull to me, in all due respect, tastes kind of like piss. And I don't know really what piss tastes like, but they don't taste good. You know, they just have a weird flavor to them. I've never been really a fan of Red Bull, but this woman apparently loves Red Bull so much. She's so addicted to Red Bull. And it's like the full sugar version of it, that she got a code put on her arm that is the code that's on a can of Red Bull. And so that she loves him so much that she doesn't even have to put the can, you know, when you do the self-checkout, which I don't know why you would do this, because the can's got the code on it and you can just put it right across the thing. But she wanted to get the Red Bull code on her arm because she loves it so much. And then now she can go through like self-checkout and she just puts her arm on the thing and it clicks like it's a Red Bull.
Look at this fella trying.
There you go. Impressive. So she got one of those put on her arm and it works as a Red Bull code. That's how much she loves Red Bull. So I don't know if you love anything as much as she loves Red Bull, the full sugar version of Red Bull, but she does. So the energy drink, man, wouldn't that have been great if you would have been a person who would have had the foresight to get into the energy drink arena? Because I mean, they're making just boatloads of money, but the docs always tell you like, they're terrible for you. But reality of it is that, you know, for me, every once in a while, like I'm going on a trip to, like I said, a business trip over the weekend to Arizona, and I'll be doing the show remotely tomorrow, but we will have it as we always do, but we'll do the show with your remote equipment tomorrow. But like, it'll be everything in my power not to buy one of those at the airport, just everything in my power. And when I was young, I used to drink sugar-free Red Bull and vodka, which kind of screws your system up, depressant, you know, just caffeine depressant. And but it'll be everything because I'll be looking at it like, oh, I want you, but I won't do it. I can't do it. And I like coffee. I do. I like coffee. I don't love coffee. Like it. Don't love it. Energy drinks, sugar-free energy drinks, love them. But the doc's like, it's going to happen to you sometime. Anyway, do you love anything enough? I guess my question is, do you love anything enough to where you might get a code on your arm so you could just go right through? Like, I got a code for that. Sir, what are you doing with your arm? Beep. See? I don't think so. Not Red Bull. This, I don't know. I don't know how Red Bull exists with all the good tasting energy drinks right now, but there you go. So that is your sweet, clean, family friendly Caboose Pistol. That's what I mean. Rockstar's good. All these other ones have like flavors to them. And Red Bull's like, I mean, Red Bull does do the flavored ones, but the original pisses me off so much that it tastes so bad that I won't try them. I was like, nah, sorry, you screwed it up. You had a big chance. Didn't do it. Monster does that as well. Hard pass because they're drinking Monster all night during graveyard during the day. Tried to tell them, don't drink. Yeah, you got, if you don't drink it, that's good. Don't start. This stuff's so addicting. Let's see, what else do we have today's edit? Friday edition of the show on location tomorrow. I may do that for a Friday edition of the show because we haven't done it for a while. I will not be available this week for Bottom of the Pint. Sorry about that. Because like I said, we've got a business trip and I won't be available for Friday night this week. So anyway, there you go. There's some stuff behind the scenes. All right. Great stuff today. Had a great time today. Episode 153, Giant season on the brink. Eighth inning, that was confusing. Eldridge, maybe they'll get that desperate. Closer, it's Ryan Walker out, Duvall in. 49ers 11th, according to Seth Walder. How big of a difference for Saleh? OKC on the verge, which is not good news for the Warriors. Verge of a dynasty, I tell you. Where was this Minnesota team? Oklahoma City's that good. Knicks, oh, they test my theory tonight. I said that they would not have two small market teams. We'll find out tonight. Too much TNT. Again, they're not dying. They're not going away. Random Things and Caboose Pistol Red Bull. There you go. That is the episode 153. Do remember, before you get out of here today, please give us that like. That would be outstanding. Also, get those alerts on because, like I said, the Niners are talking to the media today, so I will analyze those things and the things that are said. We'll either do that today, later, or tomorrow. And what else? Just subscribe to John Lund Unleashed and the Bay Area Sports Collective. Thanks for watching today on X at John Lund Radio. And on John Lund Radio on Instagram, please consider coming over to YouTube, hanging out with us, and subscribing if you would. That would be outstanding. All right, make sure that you're on the Bay Area Sports Collective. We'll have more shows and more podcasts in the Bay Area Sports Collective. If you're watching later, that is great. If you missed some of the stuff we said at the beginning about the Giants, either go back to the beginning or I will post the chapters later and you can click them, but that's only on YouTube. And again, we'll put this up on a podcast. If you miss some of it, Apple, Spotify, wherever get your favorite podcast. Everybody have a tremendous Thursday. We'll talk to you on location for the Friday edition of the show.
Thanks for hanging out with John Lund Unleashed. We'll try to be better next time, though I wouldn't hold my breath. Please like and subscribe on the John Lund Unleashed Pod YouTube channel. Watch live shows weekdays at 8 a.m. on YouTube, Instagram, and X. And make sure to have your alerts on for shows throughout the day or night. All things Lund can be found at johnlundunleashed.com. johnlundunleashed.com.
Goodbye!